Bon evening.
Bon nuit.
Bon nuit.
Welcome. Bienvenue.
Very good.
To shorthand.
Yep, don't know what shorthand is in French.
petit hand.
What's the French for? I used pomme de...
Hand, pomme. Ma.
Ah.
Petit ma. Welcome to petit ma.
Anyway, we don't have French stuff today for you on this week's shorthand, but we do have a disgusting YouTube man. Late one Sunday evening in June 2007, a 14-year-old girl, Sarah, not her real name, was sat alone in her bedroom listening to a Christian radio show where teens ring in and discuss their Christian problems. And Dawson McAllister, the host of said radio show, lent a sympathetic ear to these young Christians and he provided them with Christian advice. That night, Sarah, long-time listener, first-time caller, decided to pick up the phone and share something on the air. Sarah told McAllister, Dawson McAllister, the radio host, a story of how she had been sexually assaulted in her own home just 8 days before. The staff working on the show acted quickly, and while Sarah was still on the line, they contacted the police. The following evening, officers arrived at Sarah's home in Pinellas County, Florida. She was a shy and introverted eighth grader who was regularly bullied at school and spent most of her time on the computer editing photos. So being questioned by police officers terrified her.
But Sarah knew she had to tell them what had happened to her at the hands of a man she met on MySpace named Darvey. This Darvey had contacted Sarah, saying he was a hairstylist living in Orlando and that he wanted to give the 14-year-old a new look. He said he'd even come to her house to dye her hair, if she wanted. Sarah's mother is a single parent, working two jobs as a nurse. So one night, when she was out on a shift, Darvey paid Sarah a visit. That night, Sarah, who was 14 years old, don't forget, performed oral sex on Darvey. This was Sarah's first ever sexual experience. The 14-year-old burst into tears as she explained to the officers sat in her house how she'd started speaking with Darvey a few weeks before the night in question. She told them how Darvey would end their conversations by telling her how much he loved her. And she said she'd believed him then, and that she still did, kind of, now.
Heartbreakingly, Sarah's main concern was that she was going to get Darvey in trouble. One of the officers, Captain Kurt Romanowski, a detective within the Crimes Against Children squad in Pinellas County, tracked down this Darvey character through a MySpace page entitled Darvey, Elite Hair God.
Hate him for everything.
So MySpace, though. Darvey's real name was Jesus David Torres, and he was 22 years old. So Captain Kurt phoned this Torres, and in quite an odd move, told Jesus David Torres that Sarah's mother wouldn't go after his arrest on the condition that he stopped contacting Sarah altogether. Torres told Captain Kurt that he wasn't aware that Sarah was just 14. He apologised and promised to cut off all contact.
Now let's be clear what the law actually says about situations like this. What Torres did to Sarah falls under lewd and lascivious battery, which means engaging or inciting a minor under 16 years of age to engage in any type of sexual activity, or intentionally touching a child in a lustful manner. This we took from like Florida's description of it. It may vary state to state, but this is what Florida says, and that's where they were. Now, just to be clear, lewd and lascivious battery is a second degree felony punishable by up to 15 years in prison.
Good.
Exactly. And it can be more than 15 years if that person already has like another charge.
Sure.
Or another conviction that links to it. That feels like the average amount of time that people kind of get for crimes like
Absolutely.
That.
Absolutely.
And claiming not to have been aware of the victim's age is most definitely not an admissible defense in Florida.
Mm-mm.
Just saying, oh, I didn't know she was 14. That's not good enough. But for some reason, Captain Kurt and the police simply let Torres off the hook as though he'd been driving around with like a broken headlight or something. They're so like casual about it. They're so just want to make it go away. And again, we need to be clear, Captain Kurt wasn't just like a random officer, beat cop who turned up that night. He works in the Crimes Against Children unit.
Yeah. And just to be clear, we are saying Captain Kurt, not Captain Kirk.
Yes, let's be clear. So however, This is what happened. And for most of you, the name Darby Vanity is not one that is new. So you already know that despite Captain Kurt's stupid behaviour here, this definitely wasn't the end of the story.
A few months after this incident, the paedophilic hairdresser Jesus Torres started a band called Blood on the Dance Floor.
Die.
A scene kid electropop crunkcore group. It's so MySpace that
it hurts
me physically, internally.
Yeah.
If you want to know more about crunkcore, you just need to take yourself over to Urban Dictionary that describes it as one of the worst genres ever conceived.
That is hilarious. Though I do want to understand what it actually is. Crunkcore, according to Wikipedia, is a musical fusion genre categorized by the combination of musical elements from crunk, post-hardcore, heavy metal, pop, electronic, and dance. Oh, and the genre often features screamed vocals, hip-hop beats, and sexually provocative lyrics.
Oh, good.
Everything and nothing at the same time.
Yes, exactly. And Torres was naturally the front man of said crunkcore band, and he now has a stage name, Darby Vanity. He would dress in gothic clothes and indulge in flamboyant, multicoloured spiky wigs and a lot of makeup. Blood on the Dance Floor's heavily auto-tuned songs touched on topics that they knew would strike a chord with the preteen MySpace generation of the 2000s, so me. And those messages were, of course, fuck what your parents say, sex is cool, so is self-harm, and a Skins party is not a lame thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Skins, the TV show.
Yes.
Darby Vanity and Blood on the Dance Floor somehow managed to amass a following of almost 2 million children, and they toured the nation because of it. They wrote songs about school shootings, revenge porn, murdering women, the classics.
Great.
And one of Darby's more inspired lyrics was, I'll fuck you in the face and leave a nice taste.
Wow.
I don't want to be fucked in the face.
That sounds horrendous. I hate this guy.
And despite the band claiming that all ages were welcome to their live shows, their performances were disturbingly sexual.
He's really giving me, like, a less successful Ian Watkins vibe.
Yo, like, that is exactly what it is. I'm just going to go and look, I'm just going to take a look at him.
Oh, please do. Please do. Disgusting. In fact, let's all collectively, as a group, Google Darby Vanity.
Oh, God. Okay. What we're looking at is a cross between a failed Ian Watkins and a Juggalo.
Yes. Yes. So the Juggalos will not thank you for that because, as we will come on to find out, they fucking hate Darby Vanity. But we'll come back to that later.
If you do a Google and look him up, as I'm sure you all did, because you are obedient, you can look at videos of him dancing in his boxers on stage in front of an underage crowd, screaming, I just want to come on all your little titties tonight, as he squeezes his crotch. Disgusting.
Yes.
I'm uncomfortable. Let's move on.
Let's move on. Unfortunately, we can't move on to anything that is not awful because this entire episode is about Mr. Darby Vanity. But 2 years after being let off the hook for assaulting a 14-year-old, Torres was right back on it. Blood on the Dance Floor were in Denver, Colorado for a show when one of Torres's former bandmates, Garrett McLaughlin, spotted him alone in their tour bus with two teenage girls just before the group were about to go on stage. Halfway through the show, police actually turned up and arrested Torres after one of the girls reported him for having forced her to perform oral sex. But Torres was released just a few days later. According to a video that Torres posted at the time, the girl, quote, had mental issues and had failed a rape kit, so he was let go.
One doesn't fail a rape kit. It's not a pass or fail situation.
God's sake. But Torres, while saying these things about that girl, also hinted online that he'd come to an arrangement with her to keep quiet, before adding, I always treat women with respect. Seems very contradictory because he's saying, it never happened because she, quote-unquote, failed this rape kit. She also is mental, and I treat women with respect, but I've also settled out of court with her so she stays quiet. Lots of messages there. Torres, which one are you going with?
Well, I can tell you which one McLaughlin went with. He quit the band. I was like, I want absolutely no part of this.
Good for him. That Absolutely, must have been hard to do, because like to have 2 million followers
back then,
you know, it's not an easy thing to have achieved. We also know that people love to ride on the coattails of power and hide in plain sight. And like, it doesn't have anything to do with me. I'm not the one raping teenagers.
Jesus.
So good for McLaughlin for stepping out of the band.
Step out he did, and he was replaced by 17-year-old J. Von Monroe, who stayed with the band all the way up until 2016. At which point, he spoke out against the numerous times he had witnessed Darby Vanity wandering off with underage fans. J. Von Monroe also happens to be HIV positive, and accused Darby Vanity of having forced him to go on tour without his medication.
Why?
Yeah.
It's just a control thing. Because, like, what has that got to do with anything? Other than the fact that somebody in your band needs those medication to stay alive and stay well, the only reason that you would do something like that is for control.
Yeah. And as the band and Torres's individual fame grew, his sexual crimes became a massive open secret, just like Ian Watkins. And there were multiple online groups exposing him as a paedophile. And as a result, multiple venues cancelled Blood on the Dance Floor shows.
So by 2010, the allegations against Torres were so widespread that he actually began addressing them in his song lyrics. And here are some of those examples. Look at me, I'm beautiful, not a suspect of rape. My name and reputation won't be the target of a slut. Call me a paedophile, underage is not my style. What the fuck is going on? And despite all of this, despite him openly addressing these allegations in his lyrics in very provocative ways, Torres continued to be able to prey on more victims with textbook predatory tactics. His legion of fans were predominantly, unsurprisingly, teenage girls. And these teenage girls were ones who felt like outcasts. So Torres knew exactly how to manipulate them. In 2010, Blood on the Dance Floor collaborated and toured with famous YouTuber and singer Jeffree Star. After the tour, Star tweeted, "I'm gonna speak the truth till I die. I saw Blood on the Dance Floor Darby Vanity bring underage girls to his hotel rooms and do sexual things. 100% illegal. Being on tour with that child fucker has made me see the truth. I regret ever doing a song with that pig. RIP, because you'll never be me." Just to remind you, that was a tweet by Jeffree Star in 2010 after he had been on tour with them. Jeffree Star has since deleted those very passionate tweets and strangely has gone on to make another song with Blood on the Dance Floor just 4 years later. But we'll come back to him later.
I am not a Jeffree Star stan.
I barely know who he is, and what I have seen, I'm not interested.
You don't want to cross him, though. I'll tell you that for fucking nothing. In 2014, Megan, a 16-year-old from Colorado, who'd been a huge fan of Blood on the Dance Floor since the age of just 11, received some DMs from the King of the Emo Nonces, who by this stage in the game was 28. Darby Vanity told Megan that he was coming to Denver for a show in July and wanted to take her out on a date. A pair of them texted for months leading up to that show, and eventually they went to the cinema together to watch X-Men, during which Torres kissed Megan on the lips. It was her first kiss.
I hate that. I hate that for her.
Later that evening, Megan went home and fell asleep, but was woken up at 3 a.m. by a phone call from Torres. And they spoke to each other for about an hour. And after that, Torres told Megan that her reception was really bad, and he asked her to go outside.
It's like a horror film. And when she did, to her shock, Torres was parked down the street in a fucking van. As Megan approached, Torres suddenly grabbed her by the wrists and told her to delete all of their messages before leading her into the back of the van. He then told her, "I can't wait to fuck your teen mouth." And like pretty much every other story from his victims, Megan alleged that Torres then violently forced her to perform oral sex on him. And Megan told the Huffington Post in an interview that she has since given that Torres forced her head into his crotch so violently that he ripped out clumps of her hair and left her mouth bleeding.
And he wasn't done with her. He continued to regularly call and text teenage Megan for months afterwards, acting as though the sexual assault had never happened, which meant Megan started to second-guess herself, as though perhaps she'd overreacted and what had happened to her was just completely normal. In 2015, Torres offered to fly Meghan out to San Diego, and she said yes. Meghan didn't know Torres had only booked her a one-way ticket. He knew full well that Meghan had no job and no money and couldn't afford to get herself home without him. Meghan has said in interviews since that Torres explained to her that she'd have to perform sexual favours for him if she wanted him to pay for her flight home. And every time she did that, she would make $50 towards the cost of a flight ticket.
Jesus fucking Christ.
It's horrific.
Truly. So when the Huffington Post published their damning article against Darby Vanity with dozens of testimonies and interviews with Torres' victims in 2019, Torres remained silent and just posted cat pictures and selfies to his Instagram. His fan base, however, did not stay silent. Thousands of young teenage girls leapt to his defence and even began attacking his accusers and former bandmates using the hashtag Darby Vanity is innocent. They sent his accusers death threats and messages telling them to kill themselves. One of his supporters even tweeted, "If any of this shit was real, Darby would be in prison." Oh, how naive and stupid and twisted all of you are. Jesus Christ, that is so disgusting.
Yeah. And it brings us on quite nicely to how incompetent and irresponsible the police were when they were handling the accusations against Torres for almost two decades. If Captain Kurt had done his job all the way back in 2007 when the 14-year-old Sarah had told him what Torres had done to her, then perhaps dozens of young girls and women could have been spared a lifetime of trauma. But the statute of limitations had passed in Sarah's case, but Florida lawmakers have since passed a bill allowing prosecutors to file sexual battery charges at any time in cases where survivors are minors at the time of the assaults. Pinellas County Police have said that although Torres apologised for what he did to Sarah over the phone, this couldn't be interpreted as an official admission of guilt because it was over the phone and not in a formal setting.
This is the thing. He says when Captain Kurt calls him and says, "This is what this girl is saying, but her mum won't press charges if you stop contacting her." He doesn't say that never happened. That's all completely bollocks. He just says, "I didn't know she was 14, which, as we've already said, is not a defense against this kind of accusation. But now they're saying that him saying that he was sorry and he didn't know she was 14 is not even an admission that that happened, even though it very obviously is.
And having said that, the police said that they didn't really feel the need to bring Torres in for proper questioning. And they also added that Sarah was pretty reluctant to cooperate in the quote-unquote investigation.
Oh my God. This is such a common misconception because victims of crime do not need to cooperate with the police and prosecutors in order for accused criminals to be arrested and charged. Yes, of course, testimony from victims can be crucial in getting a conviction. But it's up to the officers to decide whether to arrest people and down to prosecutors to press charges. It's not up to like a 14-year-old child who's been the victim of a sexual assault to decide whether that case gets progressed or not. And in cases of sexual assault against minors, it's far more straightforward than in other sexual assault cases where consent is the main issue, because obviously minors cannot legally consent to sex. So that he said, she said, was there consent or was there not, is not even a part of the conversation. He did it, and he admitted to it by saying that he was sorry he didn't know she was 14. A former sex crimes prosecutor has even called Captain Kurt's decision not to arrest, charge, and prosecute Torres as nothing short of incredibly lazy, sloppy, and irresponsible police work.
Today, Jesus David Torres is 36. He lives with his parents in Florida and is still yet to face any legal consequences for his abusive behaviour.
That is unbelievable, because I, like many people, knew this case like from a distance, been in the news on and off multiple times. I did not realize he was just out and free.
Yeah, me either. It's even more unbelievable when you consider that since 2007, over 20 women and underage girls have come forward with allegations of sexual assault at the hands of Jesus Torres. Those are just the ones who've come forward. The real number is extremely likely to be much higher. Yet, Torres still has no criminal record. His name doesn't appear on a single sex offender registry, and he's still releasing music and selling merch. Although all of Torres' former bandmates have now abandoned him, including his wife, he's rebranded himself twice in the last couple of years as a solo artist, first as Kawaii Monster, and most recently as the most vivid nightmare.
You're a 36-year-old who lives with your parents.
And, like, get can fucked. We let emo go now?
Yes, like, I think we should.
Send it off. It's we had gone. The time. We did the side fringe.
We did it. We've all done it. Big tick there. Let's just let it go. Let's not revive that. Let's not.
No, I really hope not. You know what? I'm actually upset enough at the return of the low-rise gene. I don't need to be further upset.
No, let's move forward. So as the years passed, Torres's horrendous campaign of abuse kind of faded from the zeitgeist. That is, until 2019, when MetalSucks.net and the Huffington Post published articles on his crime, complete, like we said, with interviews from survivors. That year, Spotify announced that it had removed all of Blood on the Dance Floor's music from their streaming service, stating that Torres's conduct violated their guidelines on prohibited content. Yes, presumably because he's saying how he wants to come on the little titties of teenage children. I will. But we checked. And although Blood on the Dance Floor is indeed no longer on Spotify, Darby Vanity's music, under Kawaii Monster and The Most Vivid Nightmare, is still available on Spotify. Don't go listen to it. And I probably don't need to tell you that because collectively, they both barely get about 1,000 monthly plays, which in Spotify money is probably a penny. But they are still there. So what was next in the Darby Vanity saga? Well, this is when Chris Hansen, the former host of NBC's To Catch a Predator turned YouTuber, also began releasing a series of videos about Darby Vanity in 2020. Hansen announced that he's going to investigate Darby Vanity and wants to put him behind bars. Since then, on his YouTube channel, Hansen has interviewed a number of people who witnessed Torres' crimes firsthand, as well as Torres' survivors. And coming back to Jeffree Star, well, he has received quite a lot of backlash after his interview with Hansen, where he claimed that he was unaware of Torres' abuse in 2010, despite having made a series of serious tweets calling him a child fucker at the time. So you can't retrospectively spackle up your reputation on this.
No, although it is something he is quite good at and has done many times. And we weren't lying about the Juggalos. Hansen also interviewed the Insane Clown Posse, who have made Torres Juggalo enemy number one and have called for Juggalos everywhere to beat Darby down. So they've fatwed him.
They fatwed him. Yeah. Juggalo fatwa out on Darby Vanity. And you know what? I don't hate it.
I'm not mad at it. But even still, there hasn't really been any news about Torres since 2020, that being an article from Insider claiming that the FBI were now involved in his capture. When we were in Michigan on tour, there was like an additional bunch of Faygo in the fridge on top of the rider. And we were talking to the audience in the VIP bit and I was like, yeah, we've got loads of that stuff that Juggalos drink.
Oh, yes. That has happened. I wasn't groaning at that. I was groaning at something I've just Google imaged. And I'm going to end today's episode on this.
Okay.
And maybe we'll put a link to this picture in the show notes so you can all share in this discussion.
Is it a before and after?
It is no. It is a picture of him in bed, kind of like meant to make you feel like POV, like you're in bed with him.
Gross.
And firstly, he's got black sheets.
Ugh! Hideous.
Yep, so that's it, guys. I hope you were all sufficiently horrified by that terrible, disgusting story and the fact that that man is still free.
Yep.
And wandering this earth. Yeah, look at that image. It's horrible. And he is truly the greatest nightmare or whatever the fuck he calls himself. Bye.
Bye.